Hello everyone, this is Aditya Mehta and you are listening to the podcast on personality development. In today's episode, we are going to touch two crucial topics which is important for all of us for developing our career to new and amazing heights. And joining me in this episode is a very, very, very special guest. A person who completed his doctorate in physical therapy while becoming legally blind, a motion mentor, and a work culture consultant, and the founder of Love to Move Company to address sedentary aspects of work culture. He is also an author and a TEDx speaker on the very same topic. He is Stephen Zavlin. First of all, Stephen, thank you so much for taking out your valuable time and being a part of this show and, you know, sharing your wisdom on this show. I really, really appreciate it. And I welcome you on the show with my open hearts, I would say.
Thank you. And I am excited to be here. I love talking about all this stuff. So I'm just thrilled to be listened to, I suppose.
Wow, that's pretty wonderful. And I'm pretty much sure that you are going to add a great amount of value to this show and to its audience as well. But before diving straight into the topic, if you can, give a brief introduction about yourself first, because I know, I have given a short introduction of yours, but, people would like to know more from your end as well. So
sure. So a brief biography, if you would, in this case, of I was actually born in Moscow, Russia, and then we moved to the States when I was seven, which that was a fun experience. But growing up in the States, I've always kind of liked movement, and it dipped down a little bit during high school at one point, but eventually I made my way back to loving movement, enjoying exercising and all of these things, while developing a huge love for music as well. So I actually started my undergraduate initially when I got my degree. I started in music and then switched to kinesiology, which is effectively exercise science. My parents said, you should go to grad school. And it wasn't really a should, it was a, you're going to grad school kind of a thing. And I thought, oh, what am I gonna do with this? I have no idea. Okay, let me look into it. And all of a sudden I saw physical therapy. I went and observed a physical therapist and I thought, you get paid to do this? This is amazing. I want to do this. This is fantastic. So I went to grad school and it was first semester of grad school that I developed a little bit of a pain in my eye and I wasn't sure what was going on. I went to, and I've kind of had eye issues of just vision generally all the time from birth. One of my eyes didn't develop well, so it was basically useless. And I've always been using one eye. Went to the doctor. They said, oh, it's not a big deal. It didn't seem to go away, even though it was not a big deal. Misdiagnosed for about 3 months. And finally, when I went to a completely different specialist, they said, you've been completely misdiagnosed. There was actually a parasite in your eye and we need to take care of this parasite. By this point, I was so light sensitive. I couldn't drive. I couldn't really do anything. And I had to take a year off from school just to get all the surgeries, all the medications and everything. Incredibly just blessed and so fortunate to have my family support me at that point, because I was up in Philadelphia. They flew up there. This is miles and miles away from where we live. And so that was fantastic. Long story short, I recovered some of my vision through all the many surgeries. I finished my doctorate, thank goodness, and I went into the clinic. And yay, I'm now in the clinic. Things are going well. My vision isn't fantastic. I can't drive, but I can somewhat read. And over the next several years, the vision is slowly declining. And I'm slowly becoming aware that while I love physical therapy, people are coming in and I make them feel a little bit better. I give them some exercises, maybe do some of the hands-on techniques. They feel better. A year later, they come back, same exact issue. And I was going, okay, what's the problem? So it was all the sitting that they're doing at work, the fact that they're stuck in the same position for a long period of time. And I said, all right, well, let's try to give you some things you can do at work. They wouldn't do it. I said, talk to your employer. They wouldn't really do it. So I said, okay, as much as I love this, interacting one-on-one with people, I need to do more. I need to start shifting the culture around how much we're sitting and how much desk jobs are not allowing us to move, because in the long term, it's destroying our lives and all of that. So a little over a year ago, my vision continuously declined to finally getting the full diagnosis of legally blind, to where they were like, okay, that's this is completely done. And luckily enough, I think it was 3 days after getting that diagnosis, I was also diagnosed with COVID, which yay, I suppose. And I had complications from it. So I had some heart pain and all of this. And my recovery was something like 6 to 7 weeks, as opposed to your usual 2 weeks from it. And I just took that as a sign. I said, that's it. I'm getting out of the clinic. I'm going to go into this whole business side of it and really start working on getting companies to change the culture around things, because it's very easy for me to go in and say, hey, you guys should stand up more. That doesn't really help. We really need to start shifting it and making it a team effort from everybody. And that's what sort of led to me then writing a book about it, getting on the TEDx stage and just spreading more and more of this word about it. So that's the sort of short, long version of my recent background.
Wow, that's pretty commendable, you know, like it's just fantabulous to hear your entire background, you know, being in a stage in which you were before and still coming out from it with flying colors, you know, coming out of all these things and still managing, you know, to fight, you know, like most of the people, if they were in your situation, I'm pretty sure they would have given up on the halfway through itself. But it's really commendable for you to actually keep on fighting and, you know, keep on struggling your way out. And what, like, the things which you have achieved today, I mean, even if I can be a very half of it, I would be more fortunate for it. Okay, but it's really great, you know, like many people complain about many things, and you know, at the end they give it as an excuse. But you know, you just made sure that, you know, nothing's gonna stop me. Come what may, I'm just going to do my thing. I'm just going to give solutions and consultancies to the people who actually need it. So it's just wonderful to hear you out. And I was just thinking that, you know, I hope he doesn't stop giving his introduction, but obviously that's not how the show works, right? at some point I have to come in and speak about something, but it's just commendable. It's just so inspiring enough to actually, you know, hear about your story, and it's really, really inspirational. And I'm pretty sure that right now who all are listening to this episode is getting a lot of inspiration from your story and your background as well. So thank you so much, first of all, for giving that brief introduction of yours. Going forward, okay, like you mentioned that you give consultancy related to work culture, and which is mostly related to sedentary jobs. Now, most of us doesn't know what sedentary jobs are. If you can spread a light, spread some light on that, that would be amazing, on the very first thing. And how do you do it? You know, like why is it so important to, you know, actually walk or, you know, stand, okay, on regular intervals in your office, and why is it important to have that work culture in our day-to-day lives? So yeah, all yours.
Absolutely, and it's a great question, because it obviously depends so largely from country to country and from other aspects of the culture of people. But in general, sedentary jobs is any job where you are not moving consistently. So even if you're standing at a factory line, even if you're just standing and handing something out, that's still to a degree sedentary. It's better than sitting the entire time, undoubtedly better, but we still need to move. Our bodies are meant to move and they like the complexity of all those motions. The issue happens is that as we're now seeing more and more desk jobs where you are just sitting down the entire time, now we're with the pandemic is seemingly making us a little more remote. So we're moving to more desk jobs with more and more robotics and everything going in and automation. Now, less and less people might have to do the manual tasks. So, okay, we're thinking decades in the future, more and more desk jobs. People are going to sit more and more. Why is that bad? So I'll give the shorter version of all of this. But so if you're sitting for about 20, 30 minutes, you're going to have reduced blood flowing to your brain, and you're going to have overall a reduced amount that you're breaking down fats. That's fine. If you stand up and just move for a minute, that all goes away. You're right back to working how you're supposed to. No problem. If you're sitting for an hour, you're starting to see that there's an increased amount of pain and aches in our body. And this is 1 hour straight. And then for men, strangely enough, for men, increased stiffness of your low back. At 2 hours, women also start having increased stiffness of the low back. Likely has to do with the laxity of the joints because of hormones. That's a whole different other issue. But at 2 hours, if you sit and don't move for 2 hours, more than a 50% increase in the amount of errors that you make in your work, especially if you're doing creative work, that highly goes up. And in general, you're just having more and more pain. That amount of pain and aches is building up. Now, many of us might get up every hour. So what? If I get up every hour, does that fix everything? And here's the catch. Now, if we take it longer, if you're sitting 6 hours a day, you're breaking it up. You're not sitting six nonstop, but you're sitting six hours a day. We're seeing an increase in anxiety and depression. Okay. Sitting 8 hours a day doubles the risk of cardiovascular disease. Okay. That's a little bit scary. That's a big killer, especially as we're looking at Western countries. So for example, in the United States, cardiovascular disease was still the number one cause of death over the pandemic. So it's a major issue. Here's the great news. Those 8 hour markers, if you have a healthy exercise regimen or you're getting enough physical activity throughout the day, you can reverse most of those. So we're still good. 11 or more hours is the issue. If you're sitting 11 or more hours, you've got an increased risk of premature death by about 40%. 40% is a big number. And that's the statistic that a lot of people use with sitting is the new smoking as a little catchphrase, because it increases the risk of death similarly. The catch is that increased exercise did not reduce that risk. Okay. That's the scary part. So, and many people are sitting more than 11. They're sitting 12, 13, 14, some even up to 15 hours a day. Doing an hour of exercise, you're not dipping down past that 11 marker. It's really not enough. And so yes, we need to find the times to break up our sitting. So if we go all the way back to the beginning of the timeline, every 20 to 30 minutes, if you can get up and move, is great. I understand a lot of work situations don't allow for that. That's the whole reason I'm going in and trying to fix the awareness around that, because it does improve your productivity. You're going to be a better worker. And so the employers should look into it. But beyond just taking those little 1 to 2 minute breaks, we need to reduce how much people are sitting overall, because a couple minute breaks here or there are not going to reduce the hours of sitting that we're doing. So that's where how can we adjust the tasks? Can you do something standing up? Can you do an hour of your emails, spreadsheets, whatever it is, in a standing position? Can meetings be done standing up and then you sit down for the rest of it? What are ways we can adjust the actual work so you're not trying to find other ways to add movement? It's just part of movement is the movement. So that was the long-winded thing of that's what sitting is doing to us, and that's why we need to change it. And just doing more exercise is not quite the answer.
Wow, that's pretty amazing and interesting at the same time. And like you mentioned, that long hours of sitting, and it cannot get back, like the problem which is there in our body, okay, it is not going to be solved with exercises, okay? So in many companies, and especially if I talk about India, in Mumbai itself, okay, so people are traveling for, let's say, more than an hour, okay, to get to their job place, okay. Let's say before COVID, and right now the stage is almost like after COVID situation, because now the jobs are starting, the offices are started. So people are traveling, okay. And nearly about, let's say we do a 9 to 10 hour job, okay, and we don't get actually time to exercise as well, because we have to travel for 2 hours, let's say in a day, okay, and then coming back to home, obviously, like, we are not in a state of exercise because we are all tired up mentally as well as physically. And it becomes a big issue, I would say, over here, because people are not exercising at the very first place, okay? And the second thing, like, they have to perform well, okay? Like, for example, I'm talking about the freshly brewed people, okay, who are just coming out of college, okay, joining the industry. They are new in the industry and they have the desire to prove themselves, okay. They have the desire to actually do something for the company. And obviously, like, it's what companies want as well. It's what organizations want as well, that if you're performing, you're good, but if you're not performing, there is a problem in you, right? So in these cases, what happens is that students are, or maybe the employees are really, you know, into the chair whole day. Okay. They are just getting up for like 2 or 3, you know, maybe coffee breaks or lunch break or something like that. They are not, you know, getting up from their place once, until and unless they have finished their work. Okay. And, you know, this problem, can be a huge issue for all of those people, okay, who are trying to prove themselves and at the same time they are not even exercising. So what would you suggest to them, especially when they are right in their, let's say, early age, or, you know, they are in their younger power, but even during that period of time, they are not taking care enough, I would say, but they are pressurized enough, I would say, to do their jobs, okay? Because if they are not doing it, someone else is going to do it for sure, right? So what would you like to suggest to them?
So I have a couple of great suggestions for this. Now, I'm going to first start with what people think the suggestions are and then what I'm actually trying to get out of it. So people would think that, oh, what I'm saying is you need to start standing up at your desk and not listening to what your boss might be saying and start taking those breaks because it's about you and it's not about what your boss thinks of you. No, that is the problem of where if I give you this advice and the culture around your company does not accept the idea that you need to be moving more frequently, you can't do it. You're not supported by it. You're probably not going to do it. You're going to feel even stressed getting up because you're thinking people are watching you and checking every single minute. So this is the part where you have to start developing some of that culture. Now, I am going to tell you that if you stand up, standing work versus seated work, way more productive when you're standing. Of course, you can't stand all day, but you're actually going to be more productive with your work. So there's a leg up. And if anybody asks you and goes, why are you standing up? That's so strange. You can say, well, look at my productivity numbers. And all of a sudden, you're actually exceeding what is the norm. That doesn't mean that now if you're working 9 to 10 hour shifts, you're standing for 6, 7 hours. No. Start with 30 minutes, start with an hour, slowly build that up for those portions. But you will find that if you are taking those breaks more often, you will actually have increased productivity throughout the entirety of the day. Okay. If you're getting a little bit of pushback, if your boss is saying, no, we don't want people getting up, that's a perfect time to bring him either a recording of this podcast, since we're talking about it, or any of the materials that you can find in my book, or you can find on the websites or anything like that, but bring them the awareness. You could even just tell them, hey, in general, there is this improvement. Don't you want to improve the productivity of your workers? Let's just try everybody in the office stands up or moves a little bit 2 or 3 times throughout the day and see how that affects things. Now, not only are you checking in on your health, but you're also seen as the person that's, oh, you're now a leader. You've come to the boss with a solution for people having more exhaustion, for people not being happy with their job. There was a fun study that basically said that people that seem to be more satisfied with their jobs and less exhausted at their jobs sit less at their jobs, even though they work the same number of hours.
Right.
So you're bringing a solution to your boss. You're not, and as a young person who's trying to prove themselves, that's exactly what they want to see. They want to see that you're valuable as opposed to just another person who hits the productivity numbers. And I think that even in some of the larger companies, we're seeing that more and more, because I am by far not the first person to talk about the work culture side of things, and that more and more people understand culture is important. And if employees feel that they're part of this team, that they truly, that people care about them even marginally, they perform much better than when people are there just to get a paycheck and that's entirely it. Right. So that's my big thing is you can start by being the leader by doing small things, but really it's starting that conversation with other people, starting it with your boss, with your coworkers of, hey, let's both of us stand up together. That way we have accountability and right. not everybody's kind of staring at us, but it's education, education, education. Once you show it to people, people realize that this works. You just can't do too much too soon, because then that's the part where I get very excited about it, because I know that it works and it's wonderful. But if you're a brand new employee and all of a sudden you're saying, hey, this guy said that we should stand for 2 hours every single day, that's not going to fly with your boss. I'm just going to be honest with you. Start with small things like a couple 5-minute breaks or anything like that, and seeing how people behave. That's how you start, and then you build up from there.
Well, that's a wonderful, wonderful advice, a wonderful suggestion, because I think that's going to help. And I'm pretty sure that there is no boss who will say, like, you know, don't stand up in the office or don't walk in the office or anything like that. But somewhere it is in the mind of the employees that, oh my God, if someone is watching me, why should I stand up? You know, so all these things are basically the things which employees have in their mind. But I'm pretty sure bosses doesn't mind if you are standing up or you are sitting. He's just concerned about his work, to be very honest. And if he can see the productivity of your work and if you're hitting the numbers, he's more than happy about it, I feel. So, you know, that's a great thing. And I would really like to share about this, that I used to work in a firm in the organization where I was, you know, walking, standing, taking shorter breaks, and I was having a good productivity, to be very honest. I was valued by the members because I was making their task easier, because I automate things for them. Basically, I make work easier for my colleagues, and they started respecting me for that, because I was, you know, doing each and every work at the given time, and my numbers was hitting. So, you know, everything was going great, but then the work from home came. I changed my job, then the work from home came, and all of a sudden it's like the productivity margin dropped. Although I was still good at my job, but I wasn't productive enough as I was in my previous job because of work from home, and I was continuously sitting. And since we all have work from home, okay, it's quite obvious that we have that fine cushion with us, and we feel quite having a comfort, I would say, having that comfort zone where you are in your sheets, you have a cushion behind you, you have a laptop in front of you, and it just feels great, rather than, you know, the desk job which we do at the office has become a pillow and a sheet job at our home, to be very honest, right? So this eventually becomes a major issue when you're working from home, because you don't have that thing in your mind that you have to take a break, even though if you're not at the office, but you still have to take breaks, and that is going to increase your productivity. And this is my first hand experience. I felt, you know, during the COVID time when I was working from home, and as soon as I started going to my office, it was good again. You know, I felt very satisfied with what I was doing. Previously, I wasn't that satisfied because I thought, I always wondered what I was doing wrong, but now I know, because of you. So that's pretty amazing. And I'm pretty sure that most of the people who are listening to this podcast will relate to this as well, because it was a tough time and people should have been walking even at their own place. So, you know, it's really wonderful that you shared it. And I'm pretty sure that I'm going to follow it. And I'm, you know, sitting right now with a book and a pen, okay, because I really want to get a great value from you. And audience, I really feel that you should be sitting with a book and pen as well and make sure to note out all the things which Stephen is saying right now, because it's going to help you out at so many levels. Okay, so thank you so much, Stephen, for giving that answer as well, because it was really important for lots and lots of people. Going forward, you know, like you gave some perfect examples, okay, like you should be taking breaks at regular intervals, okay, but normally it happens that you don't seem to move from one place to another place until and unless your particular task is completed, because you know, you're focused in that, you're concentrated into that, and you feel that once you get up, that the flow of concentration will just break for taking that, you know, break in the middle of the task. So my question over here is, like, how can you break up those prolonged sittings because of the task? Let's say a task was of around 3 hours, okay, it takes 3 hours for you to complete, and you don't want to get up or you don't want to move because you feel that that is going to lose concentration. So what would you suggest in that area? Like, how can one person can make sure that he can divide those prolonged hours into shorter durations? So what would you like to say about that?
So I have plenty of things to add on it. The first off is it's a great scenario, because so many of us will take a task or a project or something that we need to do, and we say, this is going to take me 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. The truth is that task is usually divided into smaller tasks. There's usually smaller pieces that we have to do. It's not as if you have to work on this one specific thing for 3 hours. Even if you're coding, even it doesn't matter what you're doing, it's always broken up into smaller pieces, because you just we can't hold attention for 3 hours straight on something like that. So there, what I would suggest is, if you can break up specific bits of the task and say, okay, in between each one of these sections, I'm gonna go get up and move. You can also use a timer. The only thing about a timer is if it goes off in the middle of one of your bits, it interrupts you. And that can sometimes throw you off if you're trying to focus on the task. So you have two options. If it's one of those where you don't feel like you have a lot of issues coming right back to it, use a timer, because most of us think we're honest, but all of a sudden we go, it's been 40 minutes. I'll wait another 45. And then that's how you find yourself sitting 2-3 hours straight without moving. A timer gives you that little jolt of immediately kind of getting up and moving. But you need to couple it with something else, because it's very easy to say, hey, just get up and do something. If you don't have a specific thing that you're doing, if you have no reason for it, you'll stand up and go, this is silly. Why am I standing up? I need to get back to work. You'll sit right back down and get back to work. So I don't do this anymore, but I used to actually have a whole list. The reason I don't do it anymore is it's just autopilot now of the things that I needed to do. When you're working from home, that's perfect, because usually there are things you need to do around the house. I'm in charge of sweeping the first floor, doing dishes. These are all things that I have to do, and laundry. Great. It takes me 2 minutes to sweep the kitchen, right? Yeah. That's one of the rooms. So I get up and I go sweep. As I add these little things, or as I might fold something or something maybe that you needed to pick up or you needed to sort, because I usually, as much as I want to say I'm very organized, I'm semi-organized. It's an organized chaos. But even if you need to sort something in your office, just a shelf, great. You take the couple minutes and you do that. You've completed a task you needed to do, and you've moved in order to do it. Right. So making sure that now, if there's a stretch you absolutely love, if there's an exercise, you know, feels really good if you've been sitting too long, please do them. That's a task. I just don't want people thinking that's the thing you have to do, because then you're just adding more things for yourself to do, as opposed to when you complete another task, at the end of the day, you're going, oh, I'm done. And I've actually been moving around, and it feels better. Maybe then you do have some more time to go to some kind of exercise part, but you don't have to do that by any means. So that's the first part, is breaking it up in that sense. And then the other piece, and this is the harder piece, but it's the one that really is important for the long term. What parts of you doing that task, that long 3, 4, 5, 6 hour task, can be done standing? If the task is all done at the computer, that might be a little bit difficult if you can't get your computer in standing. A lot of people immediately go, well, I don't have a sit stand desk, the motorized one that goes up. So I can't do this. If you work off of your laptop, you can go over to a counter. You can put up a pile of books. Even for 10, 15, 20 minutes, you can transition where you are before you go back to your kind of comfortable area. I don't have a standing desk. I use a pile of books that I put my monitor on, and I do all of my Zoom calls standing up. And I may have 3, 4, 5 Zoom calls in a row, and they're all done in standing. So that drastically reduces the amount of sitting that I'm going to be doing throughout the day. That's harder. It's harder to find what is that thing that you can do, because most of the time we're used to having our setup seated. It's just easier. So it's a long-term process. So start with the small intervals, breaking up your task into smaller tasks that you know that you can sneak movement in between, and then find how can you actually do it standing up or walking, whatever that may be. Because like you said, you might be pacing as you're doing phone calls. I love pacing when I do phone calls. That's the only way I do them. If I take a phone call sitting down, I just naturally find myself getting up and walking around. I think better. And so that's another part. If you're working on a task and all of a sudden you're sitting there for an hour and a half and you get stuck, that is your body telling you, get up and go move. And on a complete aside note, if you're working on the computer, you're working with things that are very, very close to you, very close vision, you're reading books, you're on your phone or computer, anything like that, and you're feeling stuck and sluggish, this usually happens at around 90 minutes. That's about how much we can really focus. 5 minutes of getting up and walking around and looking outside or somewhere where you can look at a long distance, that helps you reset. The ideal numbers for that, by the way, is if you can, 45-minute breaks, take a break every 45 minutes for 5 minutes of distant vision. But that's not for movement. That's more for your brain and cognition. That is the long-term answer to that. But I think that if you trial it out, you'll realize that even though you think you have to sit for all 3 hours of it, you're actually going to be more productive and get more done if you take breaks.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I have written it down as well, to be very honest. Because it's really helpful. I mean, see, most of the times what we feel is, and you gave some right examples as well, that if we are going to make sure that if there is a timer, okay, most of the times always there is a snooze button in the mobile phone as well, okay, but at the same time, if your task is completed, okay, a particular bit of or a chunk of task is completed, you just get up and go take a walk. And I think it's a pretty great advice for all the people who wants to be productive, and at the same time you are being healthy as well, okay, by taking those breaks in between, like every 45 minutes, if you are taking break, you are making sure that your body is fit, and at the same time you are being productive as well, because every 45 minutes you are resetting yourself, you are taking a walk, or maybe you are doing something which you are supposed to do. And it's a great advice, and I really thanks to you that you are bringing all these things and on this show, and I'm pretty sure audience is going to love this. And audience, if you do, make sure to share this podcast with your friends and family members, because they deserve to know it as well. However, I would also like to talk, and let us transit to another topic which we were aiming to. And before going to that, I always wanted to ask you, Stephen, and I was having that question in my mind for quite a while now. You being legally blind, okay, you have done so many things, right? And the very first thing which comes to my mind, that you are an author, okay, being legally blind, okay. And see, I do write articles, okay. I do write articles, a shorter one, and it takes a lots and lots of amount of thought process as well. And still, you know, it's not perfect enough most of the times. There might be some spelling mistakes or some grammar mistakes or something like that, okay. But you being legally blind, you have written the entire book on the same topic about the work culture, okay. Like, you know, you have to sit less and then evolve your career, you evolve your work culture. How did you do that? Like, what was the process behind it? That's the first thing which I would like to know. And with that, I have another follow-up question as well, but first you have to answer that.
Sure. It's two things, twofold, really. One of it is mindset. So the mindset around it that I think that we all have is this good enough? Am I good enough? That's really the question, is am I good enough? When I write a book or when I write an article and you go, who am I? How dare I ever put this out? This isn't perfect. I can't know. So it's one part is going to the point of saying, okay, look, you are a unique creature, whoever you are, every single one of you that's listening to it, there is only one version of you. So the way that you've thought about things, the exact way you've put it into words, it's your, nobody else could have done it. So right off the bat, because we think anybody could write this book. No, nobody could have written this book, not in this exact shape, way, or form. You can argue that some of the ideas may be shared and all those things, but nobody could write it exactly that same way. Why is that important? Because there are many books that are very similar out there, but we connect with people that we go, oh, I understand that. I find a similarity with that person and the way they express themselves. There are plenty of people out there that are like you in some way, shape, or form. They can kind of connect with you. I know that we're on audio, but what you listeners don't see is the beautiful painting behind our lovely host, which he shared with me last time. And he has an incredible story behind that painting. And it's a place of solace and peace for him that is absolutely wonderful. I'm sure many of you have a place of peace that you have. And so why, like, he shared it with me, but so many of us can share that part of it. So whatever it is, you can share it, the mindset of you are enough. Just put your thoughts and everything out there. And then the second part, and this is unfortunately the harder part, because as much as I love pumping you guys up and being like, yes, I can, the second part is frequency and consistency. You just have to do it. You have to sit down and work. For me, I'm legally blind. Typing and rereading. Typing, I can do pretty well, but rereading is an absolute nightmare. I hate it. Luckily, computers and big screens help. I can make things large enough, but I'm very slow at it. However, that goes back to the not being perfect part. If I make an error or anything like that, I don't feel as bad about it because I might be blind reading it and nobody's really commented about it at all. And they've kind of helped me out with it. But how do you get to the point of actually writing the book is its frequency and consistency. I want to tell you that I was motivated every single time and it was just spilling from my fingers like the best thing has ever been written. But it's not. That's just not the way that it is. It was saying every single day, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write a chapter. Good, bad, doesn't matter. Let's go. 1,000 words into this chapter. Great. Next day, 1,000 words. Next day, 1,000 words. I went back, a lot of it was edited, things were cut, of course, but that consistency kept it rolling. And that's what it really was about, is making sure that you are frequent and consistent about it. I actually have a chapter, it's my favorite chapter in the book, it's called Frequency and Consistency. I think that it applies to everything in life that you do. So we talk about the whole sitting part being healthy part, frequency and consistency. Having a good relationship is making sure that you're frequent and consistently present in that relationship. Writing a book, frequent and consistent. You're probably not going to write a book sitting down for a week and just writing it all out. There's going to be a lot of editing and things that go around that. Speaking of editing, I am incredibly fortunate. My wife is an editor, so she edited my book. That was that made it a lot easier because then we could have multiple iterations and I didn't have to comb through all the edits. She would actually talk them out to me. But in general, It's doable. You said something awesome after the intro. There's a phrase, and I give it to anybody, take it or leave it, but it's true. Whether or not you want it to be true or not, it is true. You can either create results or you can create excuses. And you can flip it either way. It's your choice. It's entirely up to you. And I had all the excuses in the world. I can tell you, I've used the excuses. I've said certain things. Like, for example, I suck at Twitter. I don't like being on Twitter. It's texting. It's hard for me to see. And I just tell myself, well, I'm blind. It's hard. I'm not going to do it. It's truthfully an excuse. There are plenty of ways that I could go around it and I could find it. So when it came to the book, it's just getting down to it and writing it and being frequent and consistent and believing that, yeah, I am the only person that could write this very specific book.
Wow, that's pretty wonderful. The answer itself had three major factors, I would say. Okay. And I loved it, to be very honest. The first factor was motivation. Okay. But nothing's going to achieve until you become realistic about it. So the second factor was being realistic, being hardworking, sitting over there and doing something. Okay. It's a best thing which you have to do. So only motivation is not going to help, but you have to be realistic at times as well. And the third thing is the example which you gave about yourself, which you did. Okay. I think the combination of these three is the perfect answer which you gave for that answer. And I really, really appreciate that. And for anything which we do, okay, and if there has to be two things, the motivation and being realistic. And you explained both of them beautifully with the example of your own life, which is just tremendous. And I completely love it, to be very honest. So wonderfully explained. So big fan of you. Okay. So going forward, like as you mentioned, and all these things which we do, like I'm being an article writer, and being a podcaster, being a business analyst, okay, there are certain things which always matters, that why people would like to do a business, okay, with anyone in the market. And I read this beautiful thing in a book, and that thing is and it's really a great quote, I would say, that if you want people, okay, if you want people to like you, okay, they are going to like you. But if you make them trust you, they are going to do business with you. Okay, so only liking is not enough, but you have to build that trust for yourself. And for that, you need personal branding. Okay, and personal branding is something which is really, really important, because somehow you have to create a brand for yourself. And that is based on three important things. And that is, that's what I feel, that is how you look, how you speak, and how you act is how your personal brand is being created. But I would say, you know, I would ask you, like, what according to you personal brand is, you know, how important to you it is.
And it's a great question. And it's been this beautiful journey of acceptance for me in a lot of ways. So in the last decade, really, and it's going to be more so moving on, we're having a huge divide, that we're having this digital world. We're now having access to anybody at any point. Not only that, we have information about people all the time and what we put out there. You talk here about the idea of personal development, in the sense of, if you're trying to get to a job, you have a resume. Soon enough, there are plenty of people saying that we may not even have a resume, because what does a resume really say? So, and I'll give you an example, because that seems kind of lofty and saying, what, we're not going to have resumes? That makes no sense. Right. But personal branding is, if I was to find out who you are, what are the identifying factors of you? What would I find? If you go to a company, you said something beautiful, and it's, to paraphrase it, is basically people do business with those they trust. That's right. It. It's that simple. If you trust them, you do business with them. Right. But the key actually is another really cool quote, is that companies don't buy from companies, people buy from people. Even though a company might be doing business with another company, there are actually, it's a person in that company doing business with a person in that other company. That's what it is. And they found that trust in some way, shape, or form. It is not always that they had the best outcomes. And a lot of times it may not be the best outcomes. It's because they like the person and they trust the person. You can't, liking is not enough. You could be a very likable person, but you could be horrible at your job. And that's your personal brand. Your personal brand is you're the funny guy at the office, but you never get things done. That's a problem if that's your personal brand. So the more that you can show people who you are, the better. Here's the catch. A lot of times we think, oh, I need to show people I'm very professional and I'm very good at my job. We like to do business with people, not robots. Robots are very efficient and very good at their job. We need to be able to put some of our personality into it. How much? That always depends on the person. So if you're a person who loves tea, if you're a person who loves to wear fuzzy slippers, whatever it is, sometimes that can be part of your identity. You can have a great work ethic, but then you can show some of your identity and that can become part of your brand. I'll give you perfect examples of mine. Purple is my favorite color. Now, I don't wear purple exclusively, but always I have a little hint of purple everywhere that I have it. My whole brand on online and everywhere, there's always hints of purple. Everything, there's just a little bit here or there, right? I'm becoming to accepting the fact that being legally blind is my identity. That is part of my brand. When you're talking to me, that is part of what it is. I'm not out there telling people, hire me because I'm blind, but I'm not hiding the fact that I am blind. It's there. Because when people see that and when they see you being vulnerable, they go, oh, I have the same issues. I've got an uncle that, you know, had a cataract surgery or something like that. And they go, I can relate to you. And I know that you're willing to be honest with me so I can trust you. So when it comes to personal brand, you're asking me how I would define it. It's personal. It's making sure that you are truly showing up as yourself and not as any kind of cookie cutter thing. And that's what not even just us as individuals, but a lot of companies are not understanding. I see the social media on a lot of these companies and it's just the most basic text on a little background. And that's all that they're really posting. But as soon as they post their employees, you know, playing volleyball or their employees having a yoga session together or even just saying, hey, look, we had a Christmas party or whatever it might be. Huge. Everybody goes, wow, I know those people. I recognize those people. Hey, look, this person looks like they're having fun. Personal branding. We're trying to bring the person into all of the branding. So that was kind of a long way. I'm sure you have more questions about it. Let's get into that. But that's sort of the answer.
Well, I completely understand. And believe me, like I am, you know, loving listening to you, to be very honest. So you can keep your answers big. I don't mind at all, to be very honest. I'm pretty sure audience is loving it as well. You know, I think this would be the last question for the show and then we'll be moving towards the end of the show as well. So the question is very simple. How can, one achieve a good personal brand? And if, let's say, after listening to this episode, someone is trying to make a good brand of themselves, right? What should be their first step?
Great. So this is the interesting part. So when you're looking within, because it's a personal brand, it is your brand, you have to figure out what is important to you. That's the first part of knowing it. And then how do you appropriately portray that? If you have deep, dark secrets about something, I'm not telling you that that's what you need to show off on all of your social media, but you can't hide absolutely everything. You should be proud of some hobbies that you have. If you love crocheting or you love knitting or you love playing baseball, croquet, cricket, and show that. That is part of you. And people can connect with that. So find those things that matter to you, and especially those kind of ideas that you want to stand for, because you need to know what your brand represents. What is sort of the vision of for it? If you're saying that I am a data analyst who loves watching comedy, and I especially love garlic naan above any other naans, that I love garlic naan above any other naans. Sorry, that's just me. But if that's your thing, great. That's part of the brand. People that love garlic naan are going to now connect with you. Fantastic. So find out what are the things that are important about you. And then the next part is, how do you get people to see it? So you said three things, and absolutely that can be a very great and easy structure of how do you look, how do you speak, and how do you act? So how do you look? Nowadays, a lot of times with people, how do you look is, how does your social media look?
Right.
What does that look like? Is it consistent? Do you have a certain color or a certain feel or a certain description that's present along all of them? Or is your Facebook just pictures of your family, your Instagram stories and everything like that is only business and business, and your LinkedIn is just, you never post, you never go on LinkedIn. You said, I got this job, yay. And that's all you ever posted on LinkedIn. Not very consistent. I'm very confused wherever I might find you. The more present you are, the more discoverable you are. And if you're making yourself discoverable, people see you more likely, more eyeballs on you, people are going to connect a lot easier with you. Okay. Right. So figure out what that sort of inner part is and then put it, make it similar across all of them. And some people may go, what? You mean I should tell people that, you know, I went to a sports game on LinkedIn? Yes. People don't change just because they're on a different platform. They're still the same people. They're still interested in connecting with you and learning about you. Now, here's the important part, however. As much as we're saying, and I'm just trying to get people out of the box of don't feel like you have to be professional all the time, I'm not saying never be professional. I'm not saying start putting unprofessional things only and treat it. There is some manner of various platforms like LinkedIn, you may want to put a little bit more businessy, a little bit more professional, but don't think that it has to be only professional. When you find out what your brand stands for and what your main goal is, if it is, I want to be hired as a data analyst, or I want to be hired as somebody at a call center. Okay. Portray yourself as that person. That's your main part that you're doing. And then all the personality things support it. They are the added benefits. They are what's going to make you different than any other data analyst or any other call center employee that they're going to have, because that's really what the brand is. We have plenty of different brands of shoes, and so many of them are the same. They're not really that different. What makes them different is the brand. All of a sudden people go, oh, I have a Nike, I have a Reebok, I have a Brooks. Right. I don't care about shoes personally, but some people really care about shoes. Cool. The material, the feel. We've gotten to the point now where shoes are shoes, so much of it, but some people care. And so in that same thing, some would argue data analysts are data analysts. But what makes you that different that you can start to sort of implement? And then it's frequency and consistency. We're coming back full circle. It's making sure that you're letting people know and you're letting people into your lives. The beautiful thing now with the internet, and I imagine that everybody listening to this has the internet. Otherwise, I'm surprised how you're listening to this. But you have the ability to be present and to be posting frequently. And if you ask me how frequent should I post, more is always, unfortunately, is always the answer. And I personally really struggled with this because I thought nobody wants to hear about it. Nobody cares. Now, there are two parts to resolve that nobody cares about my brand. Nobody cares about me from that personal side. The first part is, what is the quality that you're putting out? If you're putting out a horribly lit picture of just you giving a thumbs up somewhere, and that's the majority of your things that aren't pleasant to look at, okay, most people are doing that. That doesn't make you different. It's not a prettier picture. There's not something unique. You didn't maybe add in a very thoughtful kind of part to it in the description section. So what can you do there to make it better? Make your content and things you're putting out there good. Because eventually people are going to come to the quality. They're like, wow, this person really knows, if we're going with the continued data analyst story, this person really knows data analytics. And this person makes it fun. Because if you're truly passionate about it, you're going to be like, look at this fun part of this that nobody else did. Now, if there are people out there that couldn't stand data analytics and don't want it, and you're thinking, I'm going to annoy them, they're not going to follow me, they're not your people. This is not meant for them. There's a reason that I'm guessing you and I don't follow some lighter brand. I don't even know what the brands are. We don't care. That's fine. You're going to get the people that really want to follow you and connect with you are going to find you. And if you think that you're going to annoy people and you kind of suppress that, it's never going to come out there. So as long as you're putting out good quality and things people can connect with, and I strongly encourage people to consistently put things out with their face on it, because that really shows that you're actually human, to that part of it. Don't worry about annoying people. That personal brand will build.
Wonderful. Wonderfully said. And believe me, I will be soon enough doing that. Right now, this podcast is completely audio, but soon enough, it will be video as well. At least some bits of it or some chunks of it will be video. And I'm pretty sure it is going to be soon. Thank you so much. After listening to you, there are so many things which is unwinded for me as well. I have written it all down. I'm pretty sure that many people got great amount of value as well. And this is the last question, I promise. And this question I ask is basically to each and every guest who comes on this show. And the question is, if people wants to get connected with you, they want to find you, okay, where they can look out for you.
Absolutely. And I want to start answering that question with, guys, if you have questions, please just reach out. I'm not going to start selling to you and doing all that. Just ask, let's connect. Let's talk about it. Okay. So don't hesitate. If you're going, I didn't understand, just reach out. Let's talk. I'm all for it. So you can easily find me, Stefan.Zavalin, on LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, all those. And I'm constantly putting stuff out. So if you're thinking, oh, I would love to hear more about the movement side of things, great. You can go on there and do all that. If you want to send me an email, stefan.zavalin@ltmmtl.com. And then if that's too much to remember, just go to ltmmtl.com, which stands for love to move, move to love. It's the first letters. But go there and there's a contact form. You can find out more and just get in touch. Let's start talking. I love it. I'm very present on Instagram. That's probably my number one. But Twitter, I'm sorry, I told you I'm on there, but it's the sore subject. So I'd love to get in touch though.
Wonderful. And don't worry, audience. I'm pretty sure that's much to take in. So all you have to do is go in the description panel, and you are going to find each and every information which he just said. You are going to find all the social media links of him. And also, I'll be mentioning the email. So you are just a click away from him. And make sure to get in touch with him, ask questions to him, because he loves to answer it. Okay, so I'm pretty sure it's completely, completely worth it. He is going to answer. Only if you are a listener of this podcast, okay? Just kidding. He's going to answer anyways. So wonderful, Stephen. It was lovely talking to you. Thank you so much for being a part of this show. I don't have words to appreciate what you have done on this show. So thank you so much. And to audience, thank you so much for listening to this one. And if you feel that this podcast, this episode adds value in your life, then make sure to share it with your loved ones as well. And with that being said, this is Aditya Mehta along with Stephen Zavalin signing off from this episode. See you in the next one. Till then, peace out.